the OTB Podcast Network.
How are you, Daniel?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, good. So why did this game turn on its head so dramatically last night?
I think you often see games like that where you've got two good teams with really good players. It's not surprising that one of them would be in the ascendancy, then a different one of them would be in the ascendancy. And I think what happened was Paris started faster than City did, but ultimately City are a better team than Paris are, which is why they took over. They made the adjustments they needed to at half-time. I also think they were helped by Mauricio Pochettino, who didn't have a great bench. But to watch your team getting stomped like that and stand at the side and not make any changes until the 80th minute is absolutely baffling why that was the case, because you're watching it thinking City are going to score, and then they scored, and you're watching it thinking they're going to score again, and then you're watching it thinking they're going to score again. And it may be that there wasn't anything that Pochettino could do about it, but he didn't really try to do anything about it. Just hope that his team somehow played better or got a goal on the counter. And that tends to not work. And once, especially like City are very hard to stop. When they get the ball moving like they did, when they press like they did, it's hard to stop. But with the players that Paris have, they should have been prepared for what happened, and they should have tried to find a way out of it. And in the end, the players just lost their head.
The more control Manchester City had in the game, the more you could be forgiven for thinking that the likes of Kylian Mbappe could be more lethal on the counter-attack. Why did that not materialise?
I think City are good. Paris couldn't get out. And I don't think there was a great deal of movement from Mbappe and Neymar to try and create the outball, but they didn't really look like anyone who was capable of finding them with it. When you play City, they're going to press high up the pitch, but you need to find a way. So whether it would have been bringing on Moise Keane as someone who might be able to hold the ball up, bringing on an extra midfielder as an extra passing option, just any of these things, Pochettino just let it happen. And the thing with City is that they're not that dissimilar to the Spain team that won everything, in that they don't have a centre-forward and they just play a lot of midfield players. They've got, obviously, the three midfield players that play in midfield. They've got whoever happens to be the nominated centre-forward at that time. And they've also got Cancelo, which makes it really hard because they're going to dominate the ball. And the difference between them and that Spain side is, I think, that they've got more goal scorers in midfield. Spain, when they had Xavi, Iniesta, Alonso, Busquets, like, they're not going to score. But City have got De Bruyne, they've got Foden, they've got all these players that can get in amongst it, and actually are likely to score. And again, that's really hard to defend, because when you've got players coming from all over, it's hard to mark them, it's hard to go man to man, but you know that they're going to play like that. And we've seen in the Premier League, the teams have turned up with a plan to disrupt that. But Paris's plan just seemed to be try and play better and then hope it gets better. And that's not really going to work most of the time.
How would it change things then if Manchester City did have an out-and-out number nine on the pitch last night? Would they have been as dominant? I guess the first 25 minutes of the game, certainly on co-commentary, you could hear the frustration with City maybe not making that incisive pass because they didn't have that player to pass to in that number nine role necessarily. So over a period of time, that obviously changes. And I'm wondering if that actually would have been impacted by having a Jesus or an Aguero on the pitch.
I mean, I think the reason Jesus and Aguero aren't playing is because Aguero basically finished at that level because too often injured, and Jesus doesn't look like he's ever going to make it at that level. So I don't think it's particularly a tactical decision that Guardiola's made, or at least it's a tactical decision that he's made because he doesn't think he's got anyone good enough. And the beauty of football, one of the many beauties of football, is that you add something in one area, you lose something in another area. So if you play another midfield player up front, then retaining possession becomes easier. You do lose a bit of a goal threat, someone who's going to run across at the near post. So it just depends. I mean, I think the biggest missing centre-forward that will make a difference to City, really, is the fact that Lewandowski missed Bayern's game against Paris, because if Lewandowski's fit for that, they're not playing Paris, they're playing Bayern. But I think we're going to stir the test, actually. The thing with Paris is that they're generally, I was quite surprised by how the first half went, because Paris tend not to be a team who are able to dominate the best teams. They're like a boxer who's a big puncher. Like, they've got all the heavy artillery that can take you apart, but they're unlikely to outplay you because the midfield has good players in it, but it doesn't have brilliant players in it. The brilliant players are up front, and it's about getting them the ball. But having the best strikers isn't the best route to dominating a football match. And so I was actually, I didn't expect the first half to go as it went. Like, I thought that Paris might score two or three because of the counter, or because they've got players that can create a goal out of nothing. But I think that once City got their heads straight and started playing like City play, it was one-way traffic because City are a better team than Paris. And actually, I think that Bayern would have been a better test, and it worked out nicely for City that it didn't have to be like that because Lewandowski was injured. And the first half, actually, reminded me a little bit of when United played Juventus in 1999. They got played off the pitch in the first half and could have come in at worse than 1-0. And then they got themselves sorted at half-time and were much the better team in the second half. Because, yeah, as I said at the beginning, when there are a lot of good players and two good teams, then you've got to expect fluctuations. It's unlikely that one team is just going to batter the other team for 90 minutes.
Daniel, Phil Foden is a man who keeps doing what he's doing and does it so well in recent games for Man City and all season. But David Myler, the former Irish international, was on the show last night. He's talking about how Foden is just making a mockery of what it is to be 20 years of age. And you know, the street footballer in him is just so beautiful to watch. I know you're a bit of a fan of Foden's, but he really is making it look easy at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, he's unbelievable, isn't he? I remember I watched, had to watch for work a couple, I think it was England under 18 games, two or three England under 18 games. And even then, like, I remember messaging the mates I go to United with saying, this lad's a problem. You could just see even then that he was brilliant and miles ahead of everyone else. I think the thing with Foden is that he's brilliant now. You get some players like Wayne Rooney and Ryan Giggs were like this, who were so brilliant when they broke through. They didn't really get any better, or very much better than they were right then. They just spent 10, 15, 20 years being that good, being brilliant. It might be that Phil Foden is like that, and what we're seeing now is as good as he's going to be. If he gets better, then he could be the best player in the world. But Phil Foden now, as he is now, is already an absolutely brilliant player. And he's so natural on the ball. He reminds me, it's not just the left foot in this, and he's obviously not as good, but he reminds me a bit of Maradona. Like just the acceleration on the ball, the way he keeps the ball close to his body, the left-footedness, and the kind of the way that he runs makes him so difficult to knock off the ball and so physically powerful. And also, his decision-making is brilliant. I mean, it was surprising to see him have those couple of chances and miss them, because usually from sort of around sort of 18 to 8 yards, he's a really good finisher. He tends not to just thrash at things. He tends to whack him in corners or whack him inside the near post on the keeper's blind side. So yeah, I was surprised that he didn't score, but he's an unbelievable player now. And if he gets better, then he's going to just be an absolute disgrace.
I'm not going to ask you how good can he become, because you just said he can become one of the best players in the world and you compared him to Maradona. But I mean, I sometimes worry about young English players and the pressure put on them by the media. And like, granted, some players like Wayne Rooney come through all that and become the player they're supposed to become. I heard Roy Keane talking about Mason Mount, was it a month or 6 weeks ago, about how he really is impressed by his psyche and the way he just approaches the game, and he doesn't seem to take any of the pressure on his shoulders too much. Like, does Foden have that kind of mental capacity as well to go on and be the player he's supposed to become?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I wouldn't so much blame the media. I think the pressure that the media put on players is going to be less than the pressure the players put on themselves. Like, they're fighting for their lives out there. Like, they want the best life for themselves and their family. They want to get the most possible out of their talent. That's a lot of pressure. And I don't really think that on these kinds of players, the pressure the media puts on them is that much to do with it, because one of the things that marks out great athletes in every sport is they're not impervious to pressure necessarily, but they're able to cope with it. Like if you think about, I don't know, like when a team gets a penalty, there are players that want to take it. They know what happens if they miss, but they want to take it because they think, like, this is my moment. I'm born for this. And that marks out all the best players, more or less. There'll be some who obviously require much more work with managers to develop that kind of confidence in their ability. But while you mentioned Wayne Rooney, well, I mentioned him earlier, like, people thrive on that kind of responsibility. They want to do it. I mean, in lots of jobs, like, getting to the top level is pressure. And it could be daunting if you thought about it in that way. Or you could think about it as, this is the opportunity for me to do what I do. And the best people at anything, they might get nervous, they might understand the gravity of situations, but they're able to produce because ultimately they impose themselves on the situation rather than having the situation impose itself on them.
In the build-up to the game, there was a 50-minute press conference from Pep Guardiola. He alluded to Johan Cruyff talking about, I guess, the idea that players should go out and enjoy themselves, the hard work is done, and embracing these moments should be allied to enjoyment. I guess after 25 minutes, you were saying to yourself, well, Pep might have actually bottled this again, and maybe they were just words the other day. But actually, it seemed, as things turned out, there might be a greater zen about this Manchester City team.
I don't think Pep bottled this one. I thought his players bottled it, because I doubt very much that the way they played in the first half was the way he told them to go out and play. They went out and they sat off. They never do that. I think that the occasion got to them, and Paris started really well. Like, there's a combination of things. Like, when a good team plays well against you, sometimes a good team just plays well against you. But yeah, they're not full of classic football characters. And one of the things that we've talked about this for years that marks out Guardiola's teams is when it gets on top, they don't always react well, because he tends not to like those kind of personalities in his team. He's never really had those kinds of players who stop 1-0, a 1-0 half turning into a 3-0 half. Like the year they got walloped by Liverpool in the quarterfinals, conceding two goals in the first 3 minutes or whatever it was against Tottenham. And that is funny, actually, because watching City this season, I don't think this is the best version of Guardiola's City that we're seeing, but it is the one that looks like it might go and win the European Cup. And a bit like Mourinho's Chelsea, it took them until 2012 to go and win the European Cup that they should really have won in 2005 or 2006. It took them until 2012 to go and win it, when they were actually kind of past their best and in transition. And I wonder if that looks like it might be happening with City, that this is the European Cup that they should have won when they won the league in those consecutive seasons. But for whatever reason, the defending didn't quite work properly. They didn't quite turn up on the biggest occasions. And now they're kind of in transition, really. Like they've obviously discovered a formula halfway through the season that makes that transition seem very smooth. But they are still in the process of moving on from Aguero and Vincent Kompany. And that team is past its best. And if you were offering me the team that I support to play against, a Guardiola team, I'd be having this one before I'd have the team of two and three seasons ago.
But that's because Manchester United beat them just last month.
No, it's not. I didn't mean it like that at all. Like, what I actually meant was, in our figurative heads of if you're picking your historical teams to play, and I'm thinking you're giving me United 1999 or United 2008, who would, of the recent quality English teams, who are the ones you'd least like to play? And the ones you'd be most concerned you might lose to, I would be saying Guardiola's team of two seasons ago and three seasons ago, ahead of Guardiola's team this season and ahead of the Liverpool team of last season and the season before that. I think they're the best team of this decade and the last decade in England. That's what I'm saying. But sometimes I feel like this team, they found a formula that works better, because I don't think they're as good at keeping the ball. I don't think they're as good going forward. I don't think they have the same pace out wide. But I guess the defending, they don't defend that well, but they defend sensibly. And Guardiola's teams previously hadn't defended as sensibly. They were just able to keep the ball away from you. This team, they're still good at keeping the ball away from you, but the defending is better. It's not perfect. Like, it's still suspect, and that would still be where you said the team's weakness was, but it's better than it was. And I think that's probably the biggest difference, that Guardiola's team of two seasons ago might not have got out that first half at 1-0. It might have been 2-0 or 3-0.
Where does last night rank in terms of the great Paris Saint-Germain shithousery performances?
I mean, it was a different kind of shithousing, wasn't it? Like, they just totally lost their head. They totally lost the run of themselves. And that was, so it's a different kind of shithousing. Like, they didn't, I mean, I guess it is just a different aspect of bottling it, that when it gets on top, are you able to cope? Are you able to hang in there and find a way? And they never really hinted at being able to find a way, at being able to find solutions on the pitch. And the best managers often, they don't, like I talked about Pochettino not making subs, not rearranging anything very much, and that was an error. But you also do need to trust the players on the pitch to be able to work out amongst themselves. I remember Wayne Rooney being on Sky once and saying that if United got a player sent off, Fergie wouldn't say, you go here and you go there. They would just sort it out for themselves. And this didn't look like a team who either had that kind of character or had it inculcated into them. And you can give Pochettino some kind of a break on that because this isn't his team yet. He's not been there long. And you need time to be able to get the players to do what you want. But the teams that he's managed in the past haven't been particularly reliable in big moments. And there's not enough of a data set to say, well, that means that Pochettino's not good at that, because it hasn't, like, he hasn't had enough teams and haven't had enough opportunities to say, well, it's always like this. But it has been like that, and it's something that you suspect him of. Like, can he find a way to win the biggest games? Can he change the course of the biggest games? And that is still a massive question mark about him, even though we know he's a really good manager. Like, he gets his teams playing for him, the players love playing for him, they're organised after a while. But it took him a while at Tottenham as well. Like, when he first got there, it didn't happen straight away. I remember watching a game against Everton. I can't even remember what season this would have been now, maybe 15, 16. And just suddenly, I remember watching them play Everton, and they absolutely ran Everton off the pitch. And that was like, okay, now this is what Pochettino wants. Now, Paris aren't there yet because he hasn't had that amount of time with them. There's a pandemic going on. But there's also an aspect of, does he have the players who are able to do that? Are Mbappe and Neymar going to put in the kind of shifts that he demands off his first players? And if they don't, what is he going to do about it? Because ultimately, if Pochettino is saying, well, it's either me or them, and obviously this is now a thought experiment rather than something that is actually happening, then those two players probably be thought to be more important to Paris than the manager was. So it's a really different job to Spurs, because getting players that haven't done the thing to play in the way that you want, to sacrifice for the team and to perhaps exhaust themselves such that that's not what they're used to doing is a test for Pochettino, and whether he's able to do that, we don't know yet.
Daniel, attention turns to the red half of Manchester tonight, and that bit of spice added to Manchester United's game against Roma in the first leg of the Europa League semi-final, with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's comments that have been kind of picked up by the people in Rome. I don't know Roma well, and I haven't seen them play. I know they played two good games against Ajax. This has led to posters being put up across the Italian capital, and you have "Make sure they remember us" as the main line. We love it. Any bit of spice before a game like this, especially a Europa League semi-final, is welcome to us. But has Solskjaer inadvertently given Roma some added motivation and fuel to tonight's fire?
I don't think so. I mean, people are so sensitive, aren't they? It's of course he's watched them now, but why would he be watching them before United had a tie against them? There's enough to do with all the stuff that's already going on. I tell you why, it's frustrating watching United, having to watch United in the UEFA Cup, because they could still be in the European Cup. And going out of that was a massive oversight. And in fairness to the players, the manager, that was the last time Ole played three at the back. And I think it was also the last time he played Nemanja Matic in a proper big game. So lessons were learned at least from that, but it should never have gone like that, because United, I mean, as we've seen, City are the best team left in this competition, and United are good enough to beat them. So it's slightly frustrating that they do have to play Roma. I think that ultimately, if the Roma players aren't giving everything they've possibly got in the European semi-final, regardless of what Ole Gunnar Solskjaer says, then they don't have a chance of winning one, because you in the European semi-final, and motivation ultimately, like, the manager can do it, the other manager can do it, the crowd can do it, but it's got to come from within. And the question is going to be more about which team has more quality and which team turns up on the night than very sensitive football supporters being very sensitive football supporters. I doubt very much the players give a shit.
I'm throwing this one at you a bit left field, Daniel, but before we discuss United further ahead of tonight, like Owen mentioned at the top of the show, it's 25 years to the day since Kevin Keegan's infamous rant against, you know, "I will love it if we beat them."
Yeah.
What are your memories of that particular rant? Where does it rank in the list of all-time great managerial freakouts?
Yeah, it was good, wasn't it? I remember watching it, and it was really like, goodness me, like, what are you doing? Like, I mean, the only other one that sort of stands to mind, and I guess it comes to mind, is when is Benitez and the facts, where someone, because usually when someone loses it, you're expecting them to lose it. But the Keegan one and the Benitez one was, it didn't seem like what had been said was necessary to provoke what turned up. But we have not the remotest clue about what pressure these guys are under. So, I mean, obviously it was funny there, it's funny now, but the pressure that they were under and the way that pressure told is very significant, and it's not something that any of us have the remotest comprehension of. I mean, you think about the way we feel when our teams are playing, but we feel responsible for it and we feel like we can do something about it, but we're not, and we can't. It's not our job on the line. It's not our reputation that's on the line. We're not living it in the same way that they are. So when people do lose it, I mean, it is surprising, but then I guess given the circumstances of pressure and self-fulfillment and life, man, it's not that surprising at all. And it's in fact more surprising that it doesn't happen more often. And the way these guys manage to handle it is awe-inspiring in some ways.
Just one last one on tonight, Daniel. We're going to come back to Keegan later on in this morning show. Marcus Rashford's been spoken about before the game, kind of in a sense that his injuries are clearing up. I wonder, like you talk about not having an appreciation of the pressure that managers are under. I wonder, have we just failed to appreciate properly, maybe you have, the niggles that players like Rashford have had to go through this year, just playing so many games, and then maybe in his specific case as well, he's had a few more injuries on top of other players. And there has been a little bit of criticism about Rashford maybe flatlining a little bit form-wise, but maybe there's a reasonable reason for that, and we can expect, I don't know, a breakout season from him next year potentially.
I wouldn't agree that his form's flatlined. Like, he's not been brilliant every week, but he's been pretty consistent. I would say that he's been probably, in fact, probably better than Bruno Fernandes a lot of this season. It's kind of that, obviously, them two and Luke Shaw, United's best players. Because I think the thing with Rashford is, like Bruno, is that in a game, and this is back to the mental strength and the ability to cope with pressure that we were talking about, it doesn't matter if he's playing badly. I mean, obviously it does matter, but what I mean is that it doesn't mean he won't do anything for you. I was watching the last round against Granada, the away game. You could see that he didn't look fit. And when players don't look fit, they don't look happy. And when they don't look happy, sometimes it looks like they don't look interested. That's not usually true. And one of my mates messaged me and said, like, Rashford's pointless in being on the pitch. And I said, like, and I'm not usually right about stuff, but the reason he's on the pitch is because he can just do something. And sure enough, Lindelof puts the ball over the top. Rashford, unbelievable first touch, great second touch, and he scores. And that's the thing with players like Marcus Rashford and other players of that ilk. Like, the players that when you get a last-minute penalty against Paris or in a penalty shootout in a World Cup against Colombia and there's a penalty to be taken, These are the lunatics that put their hands up and say, yeah, I want this. This is me. And it's those players that have the ability to play in high-level games, in high-octane games, not necessarily be playing well, but still find a way of contributing to those games. And the thing with Rashford is that his big game record at United is excellent. Like, his goal record against Liverpool, his goal record against City. He was man of the match when he played in the cup final against Palace. He scored the winning goal the last time United got to a Europa semi in the away leg against Celta Vigo. I think he scored the winning goal in extra time in the round before against Anderlecht as well. And so you have these players who, yeah, they might not be fit, they might not be fully fit, but having them on the pitch is generally better than not having them on the pitch, because they have that force of personality, that ability to sense opportunity, to sense an occasion, that, like, they're killers. That the mental strength to keep trying things. And Bruno Fernandes is like this as well. You watch him, he's not playing well. And one of the things with him is that he plays a lot of killer passes. He takes a lot of shots. And you watch them, and they're not working. He's off his game. It's not happening. But then on 84 minutes or whatever, he'll try yet another killer pass, and your team will get a goal. And the ability to do that, it's not just the technical ability of being able to play a pass or take a shot that is difficult. It's the ability, the mental strength to keep doing it after you keep failing, and to keep doing it when time is running out or opportunities are running low and it's getting kind of essential that something is done. And that's a combination of the two things that you need, like that technical ability and that force of personality. And Marcus Rashford has it, and that's why he's kept playing. And as you say, like Ole said, he's come through the worst of the injury, and he's played pretty well recently. And he's one of the people United will be looking to do something in this tie that will get them into the final.
That's for sure. Daniel, great stuff. Chat to you again soon.
Yeah, see you again, lads. Have a good day, everyone.
Daniel Harris there on the line, looking ahead to Manchester United against Roma. Arsenal in Europa League action as well tonight against Villarreal.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.